At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
The Last Word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Next from Carl, who was listening to Ger Highland of the Road Hauliers Association. A new ring road around the M50 is sensible despite the green agenda, which I acknowledge. If you look at Madrid, they have an M10, M20, M30, M40 in successive rings. Their M50 actual name is the fifth ring. Our M50 is choking the city. Another one says a new motorway needs to be built from Naas to Navan to Drogheda and be toll-free. It would remove so much traffic from the M50. The traffic road network is too much hub and spoke. And there's quite a lot of this, John Gibbons, for our weekly environment spot. A lot of people listening to this and say this is the only way we're going to be able to go. The M50 isn't able to cope with all of the traffic on it. The only way around is to start building another outer ring road around it.
Yeah, good evening, Matt. I think anybody who thinks that we're going to solve traffic congestion problems by adding lanes to the M50 or adding an orbital route, I'd invite them to have a look at some aerial photography of Los Angeles. A different city, admittedly, but there you've got, in some cases, 12 lanes in both directions, Matt. And guess what? Constant traffic congestion, constant sprawl and choke. Why? Because the solution, that the only way that administration could see to solving their traffic problems, is simply adding more lanes to their highways. And what they've done is created this phenomenon called induced demand, where essentially you build the infrastructure, people flood onto it.
If you build it, they will come.
Yeah. And I'll give you a very brief example, right? Let's say, I mean, the M50, when that was opened, it opened up, for example, areas of North Dublin, like IKEA as a case in point, to people from the south side to drive up to IKEA. Now, the planners, when they were working out the number of expected journeys on the M50, did they really take account of the fact that they were inducing demand? In other words, people were making journeys because of the existence of the M50. So the very existence of a motorway like that leads to its own demise and its own failure. Now, if you go orbital, like the rings of Saturn, out you go again, you create more sprawl. And also, how many people's houses are they going to demolish, Matt, to build all these orbital motorways?
But hold on a second. I mean, you could also talk about the outer ring road for Galway, which has been delayed for many, many years. If you're living in Galway and you get stuck in the traffic around the bypass at nearly any time of the day, you'd almost lose the will to live. You've got people at the moment who are stuck in the M50 and it's slowing down and slowing down, and the number of collisions are increasing all the time. Our population is surging. And don't we actually have to acknowledge that if there are more and more people living in the country and going to work, we've a record number of people at work, that we actually have to allow many of them to travel by car because we don't have the public transport available. And when it comes to the hauliers, they don't have many alternatives, realistic alternatives, to moving stuff around by truck.
Again, we have a chicken and egg situation here. We've put our investment in roads. As a result, of course, we've had decades really of lack of serious investment in high quality public transport. But to come back to this, Matt, I mean, Ireland, for example, is among the top three most congested, sorry, Dublin is among the top three most congested cities in Europe, which is crazy because Dublin is a small European city. So the reason that we're so uniquely congested for our size isn't because of the surge in population. It's because we have not invested in heavy public transport options. If you take a city like London, obviously a much bigger city, or many other cities I could mention, they've invested in metros, in light rail, in heavy rail, all of the above, and dedicated bus networks. Now, that gives them the ability to move millions of people around. People in London, Matt, years ago gave up the idea that we can all drive into London, we can all drive around London. And the only way a city of that size works within the geographical footprint available, and the same, by the way, is happening on a smaller scale to Dublin, We can't fit all the cars. Now, you've made the point, right? We're adding more and more cars. Now, not only are we adding more and more cars, but your typical car in Ireland now, on average, is nearly a metre longer than it was a decade ago. Now, you might say, well, what does that matter? You put a thousand...
It's filled space.
Yeah, but you put 1,000 cars, Matt, on the M50, right? 1,000 cars. That's only a piece of it. Each of those cars a metre longer. You have created an extra kilometre of congestion. Yet everybody on the M50 today, listen to us now, they think they're in traffic. No, you are traffic, right? We've got to give people strong alternatives to choked transport. Now, I've had the misfortune in recent times of having to traverse the M50, and my heart goes out to people who have to do this on a daily basis. We have got to do better. And anybody on the M50 right now listening to us who thinks that we're going to solve this problem by adding more lanes, as somebody once said,
we didn't say adding more lanes. I said about building a whole new one on the outside of it.
No, the same thing, Matt, this orbital motorway, right? First of all, as I said earlier, you're talking about demolishing scores, dozens, hundreds of houses to do that. That'll be very popular. Now, you talk about planning. So are we just going to rip up the countryside, tear through all these towns and villages and spend the next 20 or 30 years creating another choke point? So what we will have...
But we might have 7 million people living in the country in 20 years' time.
And you're right.
And they won't all be travelling by public transport.
But a vastly larger proportion of them need to be travelling by public transport. And the beauty, of course, of our growing population is that it supports dense public transport options. We have tried, I think when we were a lightly populated country, Matt, of 3 or 4 million, there was an argument that you could buzz around in a car. That argument, as we are now at 5.3 million, heading for 7, heading for 8, we can no longer continue the pathway that we had before. We're now... The congestion levels are such that no amount of bypasses and orbital motorways are going to solve this problem.
Somebody else has made the point, though, if Dublin Port was only moved up to somewhere like Bremore, that would reduce a lot of the congestion in Dublin.
I'll give you an even better suggestion for Dublin Port. We need to connect a rail link to Dublin Port and get the freight coming in Dublin Port to be transported in the first instance by rail. And in case anybody thinks this is a radical idea, Matt, that has always been the case. There are old tram lines out to Dublin Port that people drive over them every day. We have a crazy situation where we're bringing thousands of freight trucks. In fact, you'll find many of them stuck out in the M50, idling away, wasting fuel, costing the hauliers a huge amount of money. We need to get much... We have the lowest percentage in Europe of freight carried by train. We need to bring back the train and get the freight onto it.
Okay, listener says, you brought up the orbital motorway, Matt. The haulier just wanted a road between Naas and Maynooth, and then he extended it. He wanted to go further than that afterwards as well. Talk to me about electric charging, because we had a listener who got in touch when I said you'd be talking about this, and who said that the cost of actually charging at a petrol station where they have a charger is a multiple of what it costs him to charge at home, and you've had that experience.
Yeah, a little more than that. In fact, I have the rates here in front of me from ESB eCars. So the high power charger is 66 cent a kilowatt. Now, to translate that into something we can understand, that means if I filled up my electric car with ESB high power, it would cost me more than filling up an equivalent car for the equivalent miles with diesel. So we have a situation here where the state or semi-state electricity company is charging about, what, 3-4 times the wholesale rate, maybe 5 times the wholesale rate
I'm just reading it. That listener says, for someone who is both, if you charge an electric car at a public or petrol station, it costs more to run per kilometre than diesel.
Yep.
69 cent per kilometre at a petrol station, 18 cent per kW at night at home. The difference is monumental.
Yep. And I do have one other little crow to pluck, if I might, with ESB e-cars. I pulled in to the station on the M9 on the 22nd of October, Matt, and I needed to top up to get back to Dublin with my electric car. Pulled in, there was a problem with the fast charger, the ESB charger. It cut out 3 times when I was trying to charge. Eventually, on the 4th go, off it went, and I got €31 worth of electricity, right? No problem. Next thing I noticed on my phone app was hopping, and I checked my banking app to discover that ESB e-cars had charged me. Yes, they charged me €31. On top of that, they put through 3 charges of €50 each, totaling €181. And I was going, what the heck is this? So I got home, phoned ESB e-chargers, and they said, oh yes, every time you tap your card on an ESB charger, we will take €50 from your account. And I said, what? Yeah. Now, it's a kind of a safety net for ESB. And I said, well, when do I get it back? Oh, very soon. That was the 22nd of October, Matt. I'm still waiting for my 150 euros back. And if there's anybody from ESB eCars listening to us today, and they will know me because I've been on to them about three or four times. And I'm sorry to say, Matt, they're not frightened of you, because the last call I made to them was on Tuesday, and I said I'd be talking about this on Thursday, and I was sure my money would have dropped before then. But no, I'm still waiting for my 150 euros. The system, this isn't, you know, crooked. This is just an antiquated system. ESB has been half-hearted and limp-wristed about its charging network since they were dragged kicking and screaming into it in 2010.
But isn't this just another good reason for people to avoid electric vehicles? Because if they can't charge up at home, if they go elsewhere to charge up, they'll get ripped off.
Well, on that, yeah, I agree. I think we are being overcharged. We do need to figure out, of course, how to have a system that funds our road network as we transition to EVs. On the positive side, Matt, I was last weekend at the EV show in the RDS, and I was absolutely blown away by two things. Number one, the number and the range of full electric cars that are there, starting, by the way, from 17 grand and going up to about 150. So the literally one for every budget. That was the first thing. The second thing is the amount of business being done. It was incredible. So all the naysayers, all the whingers, and the best efforts of ESB eCars is not stopping the fact that we have a full-scale EV transition going on. And it's really simple, Matt. It's because they're better technology.
Yeah, but global fossil fuel emissions are going to hit a new record. I mean, we covered this yesterday with Ian Guider in the Business News. The International Energy Agency has said that we're going to continue drilling more, producing more oil and more gas all the way up to what year? 2050. 2050, the year when everyone's supposed to be going down to zero emissions. In reality is we're going to actually have more oil and gas.
Okay, I heard your report and your piece with Ian yesterday, and I took it with a slight pinch of salt, and I'll tell you why. I followed various International Energy Agency reports over the years. For example, the IEA has consistently radically underestimated the uptake and rollout of solar photovoltaic, solar PV. They have underestimated by orders of magnitude. So I have a feeling, and bear in mind, the IEA largely represents the existing energy industry. In other words, the fossil fuel industry. I believe, Matt, there's a lot of wishful thinking going on here. And this isn't wearing my green hat, by the way. This is simply, again, because right now, solar PV is the cheapest form of energy in human history. The other stuff, by the way, you know, the fossil fuels, the only reason they were ever cheap is that the people who are digging them up didn't put them there in the first place. This is an extractive industry, taking away something that nature put there, using it, burning it up, creating massive pollution problems into the process, and then walking away. It was always a business that was only for the short term. I mean, the only viable future for anybody is in sustainable energy. And simply, we have to stop burning stuff. We know that, as you correctly said. Last year, we know, for example, that we released another 41 billion, and that's with a B, 41 billion tons of long-acting, heat-trapping CO2 into the atmosphere. Now, the global atmosphere is approaching saturation point, Matt. We know, for example, that the budget, what the so-called carbon budget for 1.5 degrees centigrade, in other words, permanently passing the Paris Agreement threshold, we're about 3.5 to 4 years from that. So by 2029, Matt, we will have passed over the threshold of 1.5 forever, for the next 1,000 years. Beyond that, and continuing on our current trajectory, if we follow the guidance of the IEA and others, we're steaming on for a 2.6 degree future later this century. And unfortunately, that's not compatible with complex civilization.
Well, just very quickly on that, Ireland remains highly dependent on fossil fuel. We're not producing the wind farms and the solar farms anywhere near quickly enough.
That's right. We know, for example, we've obviously done particularly well on onshore winds, you know, over the last while. We've 300 wind farms. We're hopefully going to be branching out into offshore wind over the coming decade now.
Well, that's hardly branching out. We did our first wind farm 23 years ago offshore, and we haven't done another one since.
That's right. It was a Mickey Mouse one, though, on the Arklow Bank of about 25 megawatts. The ones,
yeah, but it showed the way, and then we just gave up on it.
Yeah, there was. It's a long story, as I say, Matt, but yeah, but the big opportunity for Ireland, without a doubt, is offshore wind. I also think we have an excellent opportunity in solar. Whether we get our act together on this, that's really the issue. And a lot of that comes down to politics.
Thank you, John Gibbons.
The last word.
With Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
on the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. More terms apply.